We have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of a Purely Arsenal sit-down podcast. We are here to review the 2-2 draw at Stamford Bridge, back from the international break. And we had to let some of the players know at half-time. We're joined by Neil Shah. How are you doing, Neil?
I'm all right, mate. How are you?
Good morning to you, and good morning to you, James Johnson. How are you doing, James?
Very well, thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you for coming on. So, I mean, it's been a horrible international break, and they're coming just thicker and faster. It's just dreadful, isn't it? But we got everyone back to relative fitness, didn't we? And we knew it was a big game going in. I think a lot of people were confident going to Stamford Bridge, but I'm under no illusions with Chelsea. I've said for the last week that I felt that they were going to show up for this performance. Pochettino knows how to set teams up for big games, and you know, you can say what you like about Chelsea having sort of a younger team or whatever. They've spent a billion, and I felt this was basically going to be their biggest game of the season, and they're going to show up for it. But before we get into the game, James, I think one or two sort of talking points quickly on the lineup. I think the biggest talking point is to stick with Jorginho, probably. I think everything else kind of was like, yeah, finally we get to see our front three together, back four is the way it should look. But the Jorginho decision, I felt, was quite interesting, given that it was pretty obvious that they were going to play Conor Gallagher, who is basically a headless chicken. And he literally, but he has an unbelievable engine. And I thought it was quite interesting that we went with Jorginho, because Conor Gallagher's really good at pressing. That's the one thing he's really good at. But I just wonder what your thoughts are. Did you have any... So I didn't really have any frustrations going into the lineup, did you?
No. I mean, we had a brief discussion, didn't we, between each other. And as again, I'll stand to be corrected, because I hate international football unless it's a tournament. As far as I was aware, I don't think Jorginho played a minute for Italy. So I...
I'm not even sure he was in the squad against England.
Exactly. So I was like, well, clearly he's fresh, whereas Partey, even though he only played, what was it, a brief cameo, but what a cameo against Man City. Like we mentioned in the last pod about the substitutions, we'll probably mention it in this one as well. And I was like, well, he's clearly fresher than Partey, because Partey, for whatever reason, he can only play about 10 minutes for Arsenal, but Garner will play him for a whole, you know, Chris Houghton, whatever you want to, however it's pronounced, he'll play him for the full 90 minutes. So I thought, well, do you know what? He actually had a very good game against Man City, in my opinion. In a lot of people's opinion, I think you two agreed that he was very good against Man City as well. So I thought, well, yeah, stick with him, and we'll see how it goes. And yeah, I'm with you in that I think Chelsea definitely raised their level. I mean, I've watched all of the teams this season, because on my channel, as well as doing Arsenal stuff, I do the whole of the Premier League. So I've given people a view, and it does make me laugh that that's probably the best that I've seen them play this year, other than obviously highlights from their game against Burnley, which they won 4-1. But even at their best, and us at what I believe is the worst performance that I've seen from us this season, and arguably Arteta Arsenal side for a very, very long time. I mean, that even made Lens at the times look generous. And we still come out with a point. So, like I was saying to you yesterday, I can look at the result and be happy. But if you ask me to be happy with that performance, I can't accept a performance like that, Jack, because there'll be teams that we play that are better than a Chelsea that are currently in transition, that will not have a goalkeeper that is a clown, that allows us to score a fantastic goal, and do not fall asleep to allow me and Neil's best mate, Leandro Trossard, to step in at the end and score a very, very important goal. But yeah, in terms of that lineup, I had no issues with it whatsoever when it came out at all. I thought, well, do you know what, other than Hardy, who I would have liked at the six, but I understand why he's not at the six. That's arguably our strongest team.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think a lot of the hindsight is sort of having a go at Mikel Arteta. But you're fighting a losing battle there anyway. You start partying, you lose him to another hamstring injury because you brought him back too quickly, you get ruined. You don't start him because Jorginho did pretty well against Man City for 80 minutes. Not fantastic, but they held his own. And I don't really see what the other alternative option was, because, you know, the other alternative was to play Rice there and put Havertz at the eight, and that would have created a ton of criticism too. As we're seeing again, Havertz is really providing a better option as sort of the second striker, if you like, not when he's playing really as a left eight, not for me anyway. Even in this game where it looked kind of interesting where he was positionally, but generally speaking, he's providing that better option as his sort of false nine position. So that I didn't really see a massive alternative. So I didn't have any problem. I was happy with the lineup. But what I wasn't happy with, Neil, was it was the way we started the game. As soon as I saw the it was pouring down, the ball was not moving off the turf well at all. It was stopping and slowing. I was like, and it did not look like we were ready at all from the moment the first ball went over Zinchenko's head. And then Zinchenko loses the ball immediately in the 18-yard box. Rice quickly follows it with a very, you know, not typical Rice moment where he loses the ball again. And I was like, we are not ready to go here whatsoever. And Neil, that kind of played out for the whole, sort of, certainly the first sort of 30 minutes of the first half, didn't it?
Yeah, I thought that the break didn't do us any favours. I thought it was a very disjointed, unbalanced performance all throughout the whole pitch. No partnerships, no cohesion. Every word that describes what we have been recently was there as a narrative for the way we set out. I mean, I just could not understand how it was so poor. None of the players seemed to be at it. They didn't seem to be, as you said, ready. And I just didn't know what we were watching. I couldn't recognise us at all. And I thought, great, had to be against a team that has been so poor up until now, so poor. I had the same feeling. Yeah, I always say that with the Jimmy White of football, everyone seems to turn up against us. We make everyone look like world champions. And Chelsea have been so bereft of anything. Ordinarily, you'd think that, God, this is going to be probably one of our easiest games in the whole season. And it turns out to be potentially our worst. I mean, I think it was our worst performance, bar Lons, that I've seen for a while. It's the first time we've conceded an away goal since March, I think it is. And it's just, all right, well, that's not such a major thing because it's very difficult to keep a clean sheet for that long anywhere, especially away from home. But I just felt that, like, for example, the partnership between Gabby and Saliba was non-existent. And everyone was just, you know, heavy feet. The number of wayward passes was sickening. It's like some of the stuff that even Odegaard, that he's known to do with his eyes shut, was, you know, a couple of times where we were in an attacking position and the pass was to no one. You know, and it wasn't just him. It was most of the players. I think you guys said that probably Ben White might have been the only one that seemed to be okay in a real woeful performance. But yeah, I think it was bar the substitutes coming on and a couple of moments from our star boy, and even he was terrible as well. Let's not hide from that. You know, we always say, we'll say how we see it, doesn't matter who it is. And I'm sorry, that's one of Saka's worst performances as well. He's got the numbers because that's what he does, but end of the day, it was terrible. And I just think that the break came at the wrong time for us, especially following the great win against City. And I'm going to be honest with you. I thought that's a win. That felt like a win to come back and get a point. It really did. Because I didn't even think we were going to get a goal at one stage, let alone get a draw. So
we had no shots on target, you know, unless I'm mistaken.
Unbelievable. Yeah, two shots on target, two goals.
Right.
So that sums it up. You know, two shot forward lineup of Saka, Martinelli and Jesus, and we've got Odegaard in midfield with Rice, and we have no shots on target. That's terrible.
Do you know, in the first, because we didn't get away with it, obviously the penalty incident's the first big incident, but the biggest problem with the penalty incident, from if you're looking from a self analysis perspective, is look, we've won what, 5 penalties this season in the Premier League, right? We've scored 5. The reason teams get penalties generally is because they're in your box too much. If Mudryk is getting a header on the penalty spot in your box, there's a problem already, right? It shouldn't, and that's really, because we're going to talk a little bit about the ref decision to give it, I'm sure, and then we'll go on to talk about some other referee decisions. I think we've got to talk about that separately, maybe. But that's the real concern, James, isn't it? Like, there was already, we felt it was coming, and when the decision happened, I think we all, once we saw the handball, I think the law in itself has no common sense whatsoever. But once you see it, you go, that's getting given. You know it's getting given. You saw the one earlier in the day at Liverpool. And, they're basically, the rule is you've got to be a penguin. And if you're not a penguin, you can't jump with your arms in the air. I do find it's quite crazy that I'm pretty sure that header's going wide. And you've gone from what is basically going to be a goal kick to a penalty for the other team. It's quite incredible. My personal common sense ruling on this is if it's going to be a goal, the definitive goal, it shouldn't come into play whether it's intentional or not. Like, do you remember 2001 FA Cup final, Thierry Henry's through on goal, Stephen Honcho's on the line, he handballs it here, and it's on the line, it's a goal, and it doesn't get given. Obviously, there's no VAR back then. For me, you should be giving that handball. Henjo doesn't mean it, but it literally is a goal. But this is quite far from that for me. But I don't think there's really any need to go too much into this specific refereeing moment. Maybe there is, because there's much more in the game. But James, you know it's getting given, don't you, James?
Yeah, and I mean, the way that the game was allowed to crack on that long is unbelievable.
It's graceful, yeah.
Because we all said in real time that's, you know, we've all got our WhatsApp group, as we say, and I was in there like a flash when I, like, that's getting pulled back. And then eventually, I know you're a few seconds, I think where you are in America, Jack, you're a few seconds behind us with Sky. So apologies, because I give spoilers before things happen.
I'm way behind, I'm way behind.
I think Neil as well, you were like, that's going to get pulled back. Mike was like, yeah, he's as soon as, and I mean, when you see him go to the telly, you know that they're giving it anyway, but it's like what you've said. And again, I don't know if you've played FIFA over the years. I think, Neil, you've had a few games here and there. There's a celebration on FIFA, Jack, where you stand like that and you tip over, like you've said, like a penguin. It's like a play. How, for me, it is a penalty under the current laws, but I'm like what you've just said, the law is ridiculous, because I don't know how Saliba can get his arm out the way. What has he got? Do you have to, you know, who jumps with their arms out to the side like that? Who does it?
The problem there is, as bad as we were defending, that specific moment can happen to any team, no matter
exactly.
how good they are.
Exactly.
You can't prep for it. You can't prep for it, which is a really frustrating thing. Sorry, Karen.
Yeah, no. I don't understand. And again, you're far more advanced in the medical field and everything else like that, and the human anatomy. How are you supposed to? I mean, if I jump now, I'm going to put my arms out like that to the side. It completely, completely baffles me. But I do agree with you that you have to look at it at source. And I'm sorry, but I don't know if Raheem Sterling and Cole Palmer as well, because he kept drifting out wide at times. I don't know if they both went to Pochettino earlier in the week and went, look, if they're starting Zinny, I know all about him, mate. And I used to rinse him in training when we used to be at City, or whatever, so I know how to beat him, because he was completely... I mean, I know that defensively, he's not the best of the club, but everything else that he does, you can sometimes we overlook it. But yesterday, my word, I felt bad, because I have never in my life screamed for getting him to come off since I've seen him in an Arsenal. But I was like, get him off.
You said as it half time, I think one or two of you did, yeah.
I was like, get him off, because he's having a stinker out here. He is honking. I mean, like everybody, the whole team was honking, but he was honking the gaff out for me. I was like, get him off. Because it's just not good to keep a player on like that. Because I'm like,
he was fuming, by the way.
Oh, of course he was. But I was like, he's gonna get sent off because he was on a booking. And I was just like, he ain't going to be able to keep up, and he's going to pull a shirt or he's going to clip a heel or whatever, and he's gone. So I was like, get him off. And yeah, thank God we did, because I thought Tomiyasu again when he did come on was great. But no, on the situation, I know you'll go to Neil about it, but I just, yeah, it is a pen, sadly, but God knows at what, I don't know what else you're supposed to do in that situation, mate. Maybe Neil can... Maybe Neil's got a way that you can jump without putting your arms up, you know.
I'd be more annoyed. I was still annoyed, but I'd be more like the Liverpool. I didn't watch the Liverpool Everton game, but that is a cross. That is a cross. It's about a yard or two away from what I remember from the Everton player. That is even. I'd be even more annoyed if I was an Everton fan there, because as far as I'm aware, he doesn't move his arms towards the ball. It's beside him. It's out of his body. It's a normal motion again. I just don't know what these defenders are supposed to do in this situation. I have no idea what they're supposed to do, or an attacker if they're back there or whatever. But yeah, you make some really good points on Zinchenko. I thought it was absolutely dreadful. And I thought that was the best sub Mikel Arteta made, actually. And I know we went 2-0 down after it, but to take your best ball progressor from deep off at 1-0 down away from home to... basically say I'm going to get attacking output. We've had no shots on goal. You have to say it worked, because how many times do you remember Raheem Sterling doing Tomiyasu or Cole Parr? It didn't happen. And in the first half, I was worried every minute. So whatever Tomiyasu did, he did well. That's all I can interpret it as. And I think he's getting to the point now where you would have had Timber starting some of these big games, certainly away from home. And I think we're getting very close to that point with Tomiyasu. Yeah. Because Zinchenko, first of all, I love Zinchenko, but he's annoying me with a lot of his pre-match comments, all this Mudryk stuff about, shut up, I don't want to hear it. Don't start saying stupid stuff like, I'll do this to you if you score. Shut up, like, be quiet, play the game. He comes out with some silly comments sometimes, Zinchenko, talks a bit too much for me. I don't want you talking before a game, talk after it, don't talk before the game. I'm very annoyed when I saw those comments. I was like, I don't need those comments. I don't need you to rile up any more, you know, in the opposition than is already there. But Neil, have your take on the penalty, because a lot of people saying, you know, that they think it's ridiculous. It wasn't a penalty.
Yeah, it was. From the law perspective, it's just ridiculous. Though I'm a big biased because I'm an Arsenal supporter, and I just thought, we're playing so bad, and now this has happened. I just thought, this is a calamitous situation for us. Where, how are we going to recover from this? And it's just awful that, you know, common sense just doesn't have any meaning anymore in the world. It really doesn't, with everything else going on. You know, you think at least in a game of that, people that you see as a point of escapism, if you like, from the horrors of the world. Even that, so much politics and so much corruption and whatever you want to call it comes into it. But I just felt that at a time where anything that would help us at least try and get some headway back into the game, I guess, it just wasn't happening. And then you have that happen. But what was annoying was everything else that was going against us or wasn't going for us was also happening. It wasn't just the penalty issue. It was so many other things where players are getting clattered and fouls are being thrown in, and the referee just doesn't seem to want to know and doesn't seem to just let's play, go on, and doesn't care. The protection that our players don't get is just a great talking point, has been for a long time and will continue to be so. I don't, you know, yes, Saka had a terrible game, but he was getting clattered as usual. He was getting held, he was getting pushed. Even my mum was saying, because how many times is that guy with the long hair pushing him? Look at that. And I went, she goes, is that allowed? I said, no, not, it shouldn't be, mum.
It's by the PGMOL, because
Saka wears the badge of a cannon, so of course it's going to be allowed. It was just horrible, Jack. I hated it. And, you know, I mean, afterwards, I don't know if you saw it, but one of the boys may have put it in the WhatsApp group. even Jamie Redknapp was for us with regards to that penalty. He was like saying, how is he supposed to physically jump? What you told me? And Hasselbaink was going, no, there was a good, he was definitely in an unnatural position. And Jamie was going, what are you talking about? How can you say that's an unnatural position? How are you supposed to elevate yourself? It's just a natural human thing to do. That was quite surprising. But there was a lot more that, in that game, there's a lot that you want to talk about. And I'm sorry, a certain goalkeeper
sorry, Neil, sorry to step in, but if you're looking at it like this now, right, I know that I'm not, but if I'm a player, I feel now, if I'm playing wing and I'm at the byline, do I try and fizz it in to hit my striker's head? Or am I like you've just said, especially with that Everton one, am I like, I'm going to try, you're going to get players now that go, fuck it, I'm going to ping it at their arm, because it's going to get given, isn't it? You're going to have a generation now of players that are not going to try and pick out their, say if you've got a Haaland or a Tony or someone who's absolutely top notch in the air, you're not going to try and loop the cross to the head, are you? Because I think it was, 80? I think it's the statistic is 83% of penalties in the Premier League are converted. I think it's 83%. So you've got a bloody good chance of getting the goal there from the penalty spot instead of actually trying to find. And I'm like, yeah, you are. You're going to get this to me. You're just going to breed a generation that are going to be like, right, I'm going to fizz it at an arm, because they're going to get given, aren't they? Just regardless of the, like you said, the point of, what is it, the point of contact or the speed of it? Because, again, like Neil said, how are you getting your arm out of the way? Like, how are you going to jump like that? I really, really don't understand it. And again, I do agree with you, Neil, as well. I don't like to go for refs because I think it's cheap and an excuse. But he was shocking yesterday. He was shocking yesterday. And yeah, there was a few moments, like Neil said. I mean, the one he's mentioned, that initial goalkeeping penalty shout, you've got two in there. Because look at the way, Thiago Silva, I thought was brilliant, by the way, but he two-foots Martinelli. He does two-foot him. And for me, I thought that anything where you come off the ground like that now is an automatic red, regardless.
Even he got away with that because of the way his foot went in. That's what I thought. His studs were up, but he kind of went, still a very, very, yeah. I agree with you, tackle.
Neville and that over here said it's because he got the ball first, but I'm like, well, what was his name? Curtis Jones got the ball first against Spurs for that one.
Right.
But he still got done for it.
I think from my perspective, the bigger talking one, especially as he scored the penalty as well, was the Kyle Palmer one, which, if you look at the data, there's a claim that he didn't make another foul after this moment. I can tell you now he did. I know he did. And I know he was called back for him, because I remember watching it going, how has he not been booked again for a couple of pullbacks? But that is very close to the Kovacic tackle, which also didn't get called a red, by the way. If we're forgetting that after the win against City, no apology there needed because we won the game, no replay needed or requested, we won the game. But this one was really late on Jesus. He wasn't even near the ball. He was so late from behind, right down his Achilles. Again, the penalty, 3-4 minute review. Let's have a look. Let's get the boys over. Let's have a look. Kyle Palmer, play on. But very quick. I find the analysis for some of the stuff against us so interesting that it's just quickly swiped away. Remember the second one from Kovacic last couple of weeks ago? No, not going to review it. No, I'm so confident in that.
I can't ruin the spirit of a game in a big game.
Yeah.
But yes, yesterday, Ashley Young, boom, red.
Yeah.
I'm like, so you can ruin a Merseyside derby, but Arsenal Man City, spirit of the game. Got to keep it 11 versus, got to keep it 11 versus 11.
Yeah, real dodgy for me. And it was weird because we were playing so poorly that I found I couldn't get annoyed by some of the decisions going against us, by the constant niggling fouls not given by Cucurella and not being punished, not booked till the 72nd-ish minute when Cucurella claims that he got completely the ball when he's 50 yards away from the ball and completely taken Saka out. And I'm watching it going, that should be a red because you had about five of them in the first half And that's the problem there. When Saka's not really on it, because there's this player who's no way near Saka's level, but decided to go touch tight to him for the whole game, going through the back of him. He must be laughing, Greg. I've done it 6-7 times and I'm getting away with it. It's incredible.
The stats say that he made 2 fouls all game. That again as well. Like Palmer only made 1. That's unbelievable.
Thumbs up, doesn't it?
I can count the WhatsApp messages of Neil going, oh, bloody Cucurella, bloody Cucurella. That's more than 2. He said bloody Cucurella more than twice.
I wasn't saying Cucurella.
Yeah, you said exactly, something else. Yeah.
It was a word that began with CU. I know that much.
Yeah. But the other thing was, obviously, we can go on and on about that. We'll come back to the second penalty incident, because it's obviously in the second half. But the real problem was we literally couldn't get any fluidity going forward, right? No, finally we got a front four, you know, in the positions we wanted to be for the first time this season, and they didn't look, they looked like it was the first time they played this season. That actually what it looked like. It looked like there was no cohesion between them. Parson was off, Odegaard was dreadful on the ball. Felt Martinelli was trying his best, but isolated, because Declan Rice wasn't really playing in the left eight. He was more playing as a double pivot, because Jorginho was getting pressed too much. And I think he likes to take the extra touch sometimes, Jorginho. He moves the ball a little slower than Partey. And I don't think it was a good option for this game. I would probably start as Jorginho maybe away in, you know, midweek or something like that. And I didn't think it was a great option. The only time I really remember us doing something in the first half was Declan Rice was through in that left eight position, and it was like a cross come shot. He didn't really know what to do with it, and I was I was like frustrated that we hadn't got him in that position more, because it felt like the left side wasn't really working very well. But it got to half time and we couldn't get much worse, and I felt either Jorginho or Zinchenko or both had to come off. He ended up going with Zinchenko, which I was personally quite surprised with, but it was absolutely the correct decision. Yeah, we come back for the second half, and you know, soon enough we're 2-0 down. I think we've got to have a chat about the goalkeeper. Neil, I was very for the David Raya purchase. It's a purchase. And I felt, I like the goalkeeper. The one thing that has to be said now we've got a little bit of evidence on him is in the big games, there's been question marks over all of them. For him, Tottenham first half, City first half, this game, the goal, and some of his passing out the back. What's your opinion, Neil? Well, obviously on the goalkeeper as well, but on where do you stand on how much at fault he was for the second goal? And first, Mudrick can do one with his Bellingham's. He didn't mean it. It was a complete fluke. Start doing a Bellingham celebration like you. We know you ain't got left foot, mate, so let's not start with that. You didn't know what you were doing with it, so I'm not having any of that. Get right out of there. But go on now.
Yeah, sad to say, I think that he was probably 95% at fault for the goal. There's no getting away from it. I just felt that the positioning was awful. It's being so far forward, but for the side, not forward, you know what I mean, on the pitch, but just so far away from where you should be standing to be effective. Whilst in itself, when you look at the so-called goal that he meant, whatever, even the match of the day boys both disagreed. It was one meant Shearer, and who else was on the match of the day? I can't remember. Mackay, both of them was like, nah, that didn't mean that. Definitely didn't mean that. Gary Lineker didn't mean that. Even just from that point of view, if you want to say that, I think someone was saying that he was trying to be aggressive. That's why I think that might be on Sky, that he wants to be aggressive. That's why he's forward and etc. But the point is not for that kind of particular positioning, not for that kind of area. He shouldn't be. He should have been more on this line. But more importantly than that, even if it was ended up being a cross and not a fluke, he would have been out of position for that as well, because the cross would have potentially got to the other player, and he would have been off position to prevent a tap-in, or it would have made it very difficult for himself to do that. I don't know what it is with him. I like him. I'm not going to... you guys know how much I like Ramsdale. I am a little bit surprised at the frequency of him not being chosen for anything now, being completely shut out. I know that it's very unlikely that he was going to rotate goalkeepers. It's just not the dumb thing. But I thought maybe Arteta might take this in a little bit of a different way. He might take a different direction to it, be a bit off the wall, do something that top teams haven't done before. And he might rotate. Who knows? Because he's the one that said himself, I think that was just an excuse now, and I think everyone probably saw through it, but he's the one that said, you know, that I was never in a position to substitute a goalkeeper. So, you know, having said that, you'd think that maybe you might play one or two, three matches, then you might switch back to the other one. But, you know, he's stuck with Raya, he's gone with it. And I felt that some of the times where our managers have chosen certain players that we've been upset with is because of the price tag, that they're too expensive not to play, doesn't matter how good or bad they're playing, you know, week by week. But in this case, you've got actually the more expensive keeper at the moment on the bench, or not at all. And I think that it's a confidence issue with him. He's so nervous, especially for the big games. I think the problem of him taking over a player such as Ramsdale, now I know he's got his faults, Ramsdale, but I still think he's a quality keeper. And for someone else to come in and take over that, you're going to be, the pressure's going to be on you. It doesn't matter what kind of human being you are, you're going to have that pressure because you know that you're going to be scrutinised for everything you do, whether it's good or bad, but you're going to be scrutinised. You are going to be scrutinised big time. And I think that has started to affect him. And I don't think that is going to be doing him any favours. I'm trying to defend him here rather than criticise him. I actually feel for him. I just think it's too much too soon for a player that hasn't really played for a big club before. And neither had Ramsdale, to be fair. But that's where the difference is. Look how Ramsdale took to his job with Arsenal. It's absolutely phenomenal, some of the stuff he was doing. We were like, oh my God, what a play. Don't you remember how much we were lauding him initially? And I just feel that it's not working out at the moment for Raya. I'm not saying that he's a bad goalkeeper at any point. No way. There is so much good about that man, apart from the fact that he's got maybe a little bit of a disadvantage with his height. But other than that, you know, there's a great keeper in there, but he's just got to maybe fine-tune himself and his mind for the bigger games. That's how I see it. But also, I don't see it being a problem if Arteta gives him a rest now, because he's got the keeper to do it. Bring on Ramsdale. As quick as maybe Tuesday when we play Sevilla. Well, yeah. I really think he needs to, because I don't think that Raya continuously playing there. And if he just imagine if he stays for the next game and there's another error, it's not going to do him any favours, guys.
Well, Neil, I mean, as much as I think Ray is Arteta as number one, if you keep making clangers, he's going to make the change. It's just simple as that. And the weird thing is, that Ramsdale for the big games has always been really, really good. Do you know what I mean? And there was an argument with Raya that he's calm. And I think to some degree, we've seen this. You know, he's calmer and more assured in the games where he's got less to do. And I think we have seen that, in fairness, with Raya. But I was actually more annoyed with Raya's pass to Rice, which he actually subsequently does really well to dive at Cole Palmer's feet, but that's still not good enough. I was more annoyed with that than his position for the Mudrick goal, in a way. But I'm quite supportive of Arteta bringing in Raya. I think it's the sort of ruthlessness that we've not seen in the past, and I really liked the decision, and I still do. But you have to be asking questions now if you're Mikel Arteta and going, well, hold on a minute. This isn't necessarily as clear-cut as I thought. And if he's not going to get up to speed real quick with understanding how big these games are and being able to cope with it, then I might have to revert. Okay, I mean, do you think that's possible, James? I'm starting to think it is, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I've got obviously people that I know that are quite close to the club and what have you, and I got told that behind the scenes, like what Neil's just said, a lot of the players were very, I wouldn't say aggrieved, but more so upset at how Ramsdale's been taken out so quickly because of how big of an influence they've said that in terms of voices in that dressing room, especially with Granit Xhaka going, he is one of the loudest and one of the biggest motivators of all of them. And that up, you know, they were a bit like, well, hang on, you know, if he can super, you know, if he can subside Ramsdale so quickly, what could he do for one of us? You know, if he's that quick to throw him out, could he do the same for one of us? And I wouldn't say it necessarily creates panic. I mean, the majority of these are international footballers, so I think they can crack on and get on with the job. But there are, yeah, there are facets of his game at the moment where I'm just like, you know, you're going to have to be dropped here, maybe, mate. Like, you're not at the level. And again, these are mistakes that if Aaron Ramsdale did make, I feel that he'd be in the Hague by our fans. I think there's certain sections of the fan base, that were so quick to go in on Ramsdale. Like, for me, I never thought that Ramsdale was terrible, but there were certain aspects of his game that I didn't like. And that's what I feel about Raya. I don't think Raya's terrible at all. Just there's certain bits in his game that I'm watching at the moment where I'm like, Jesus, man. Like, you can't keep... I mean, if that one to Rice... If Cole Palmer does actually get that properly and slots that in, I think he is dropped. I think he's definitely dropped on Tuesday. Yeah, I'm like, I think he's out of here Tuesday.
Yeah.
But it was one of them. He made two or three very, very good saves, I thought, towards the end. But I'm like,
Jackson
again,
at his feet.
Yeah.
The shot from Jackson. Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And that to me, I'm like, okay. But again, that just goes to what we were saying about all the others, where I'm like, you know, Neil's got the shirt behind him there. This is Arsenal. Like, we don't, why should it take 75 minutes? You know, what, you can't give teams head starts. Like, why have you got to be 2-0 down before you go, oh yeah, we're in a game of football. Oh God, I better start playing football now. I've just remembered I'm in front of, you know, 30, 30, 40,000 people and everyone watching around the world. Oh, I better start playing. You know what I mean? We can't be doing that.
Just before we get to that point, though, at the 60th minute, Sanchez comes out for a ball.
Now, oh my word.
I think, correct if I'm wrong, but the first instance of this season was in the first game of the season when Onana flies out, misses the ball, clotheslines a Wolves player. It might have been Cunha, it might have been someone else.
I know, it was Kolasinac. He was the guy that was 6'7". That's why it stood out so much.
Okay, sorry.
He's a bloody 2 meter Peter, that guy.
Am I right in saying Pedro Mel issued an apology to Wolves for that? Or am I incorrect there? Okay.
Yeah, well,
so
they
by apologising...
it was absolutely ridiculous.
Right. By apologising, they admit that that is a dreadful decision. Now, this is exactly the same as that. He's missed the ball entirely. Obviously, there's the Paul and Tomiyasu, etc., but we're used to not getting those. Man, you're away a couple of years ago. We'll remind you of the same incident, Harry Maguire, we all remember. But he's literally clattered through Gabriel Jesus. And I think the timing of it's really key. We're 2-0 down. We're not really in the game in the sense of looking like we're coming back into it. And they just sort of blow it off. Do you know what I mean? They just sort of throw it off. If the game's in the balance, do they do that? Or if we're 2-0 up and it's on the other end, what I don't get, Neil, is my biggest frustration is not even the not giving of it, it's the quickness. It's the outright sort of belief that they've done right and they're just going to move on from it. I was livid. I barely moved off my couch for 60 minutes. I was so upset. And that moment, even 2-0 down and thinking we're basically done in the game, I was like, he's gone through it. He's literally gone through it. So, Neil, I mean, that Saliba's one penalty, we knew it was getting given. That's more blatant, though, isn't it, Neil?
Well,
it's unbelievable.
I was so annoyed. Livid doesn't even come close. When I saw the impact to Jesus' head, it was like he was being knocked out by Mike Tyson with an uppercut. And what frustrates me is not just the fact that they are so quick to dismiss any decisions or against us, potential decisions against us. They're so fast to just skim through it. And other decisions which might be going in favour of the opposition when they play us, they take an age, get the sketchograph out, they fly in Mike Dean, Howard Webb, to be there on the panel to analyse it and say, yeah, definitely, that's definitely a penalty, or that's definitely not a foul, or whatever it might be against us. But when it's something that might go in our favour, it's just brushed over, like the game, you know, where he just waved on play when Declan Rice could have been, you know, career ended with that challenge from the player that got given nothing. It just makes me sick. It's something that we see literally week in, week out. I cannot believe what infuriated more, actually, Jack, was the commentators said nothing. Yeah, they were concerned whether, oh, is he all right? To me, I thought he was knocked out.
He looked off, didn't he?
I thought he was gone. I thought, he looked Bellerin-ish. Oh, my God. Yeah, it looked awful. I mean, yeah. thankfully, he's all right. And to be honest,
he did come off soon after it, though, Neil.
No, he did, but at least he wasn't knocked out. I thought he was concussed, completely gone, concussed.
I hope he wasn't.
Well, that's the other thing, you know.
How soon after did he come off? Sorry, carry on.
Don't they do those tests now? They come on, you know, precautionary tests now. I'm seeing it in cricket. I don't know whether you guys are cricket fans, but now even the slightest that cricketers wear the protective helmets. But now there's a new rule. It doesn't matter how light the ball hits the head; they get the medical staff on straight away to make sure that you're right.
Since the Australia player incident?
It's possible, but the thing is, they've taken action, Jack. And what annoys me was this was not just brushed off from a decision point of view, but just from the point that just carry on. And I'm getting sick and tired of our players. Any decisions for going against us or potential ones that will go for us. It's just not getting screen time, and it's not getting any kind of, there's no mention of it. I mean, again, look, I'm not the biggest fan of Match of the Day, but even those boys for this decision said, that's a penalty all day. Look at him. He's absolutely taken Jesus out. He's taken Jesus out. He's nowhere near the ball. Nowhere near it.
I think it's because he smashes through the Chelsea guy as well. If it was just Jesus on his own. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, he doesn't get the ball, James. Do you know what I mean? If he gets the ball, you could make the argument, well, it's just a follow-through, even though it's not great.
Yeah, if it was near the ball, that's fine, but he wasn't. He was nowhere near it. And I think they were trying to almost mitigate it from exactly what James has said. I was just about to come on to that, because he took one of their players out as well. Yeah. It's, oh, yeah, well, that's all right then. Yeah, look, he took their player. No, it's not all right. He's taken our player out. It doesn't matter where, what part of the pitch it is, but in this particular occasion, it was in the penalty box. He's taken our player out, and you have to take that into consideration. Nothing. It's just meant to be sick. You know, I was saying earlier at the top of the podcast, we were playing so awful. So sometimes in games like this, you need a bit of luck, right? You need a bit of luck, whether that might be a decision or you might get a fluke or a deflection or whatever it might be. We've got nothing. We've got the penalty decision against us with the Saliba handball. And then we get this, and it's like, on top of all the fouls that have been, you know, our players were having to suffer, and you just think, it's not our day for so many reasons. But I don't mind it when it's not our day when our players are not performing. I can kind of accept it. Well, actually, I can't accept it. I want our players to perform all the time. But you know what I mean? Then you say, right, that's our fault, or that's our club's fault, our team's fault. But when you've also got all this going on as well on top, it infuriates me, Jack, because we see all the time that certain clubs, it wouldn't be that way. It would be looked at, the media would have a field day over it, they'd be, oh yeah, but what about that and that never, and nothing was given for that, and da 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 da, and it would be a big song and dance and a big media thing. And I just don't understand why we're treated so differently. I don't like it. It
comes off 8 minutes after the incident. Actually, now you mention it, I didn't really watch him much from the 60th to 68th minute, but I'd be a little concerned from it because he didn't look great when he fell down. I don't remember how many actions he had after that, but if a lot of this concussive stuff can come on a little bit later, you know, like symptoms and stuff like that, if they're thinking he's got something, they might have pulled him. Well, you'll know because he won't be involved Tuesday if that's the case, but dreadful decision, absolutely dreadful decision. Gary O'Neill, at the end of the game against Manchester United, had already received his apology. I know what people are going to say, what's the apology going to do? My point here is, against City, we never heard anything about the Kovacic thing again. But Liverpool are able to create media uproar across the world about replays. And that's my point. Just because the result is different. Do you know what I mean? Like, and now there's a craze around 12:30 kickoffs, which I agree, you know, it's probably not good. But what I'm saying is, why is there not... There's some really terrible decisions going against us here. Whether costly, whether not costly, they need to get the same amount of attention. need to get the same amount of attention, because what you get with a reaction to Liverpool's is refs going, I don't think I can make another bad decision against Liverpool because of all the... Why is the frenzy only happening there? It's not. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. We've had some terrible decisions go up against us this season. Kovacic, Tomiyasu, double yellow, this one, right? Really bad. And the one good thing about this was Sanchez saw David Raya and said, I can do better than that. Really? He went, I can do better than that, mate. Oh, so I'll show you how you really screw up, okay? Right here. And that's what he did. 76th minute. There is not an Arsenal side that I can think of in the last 10 years that gets back into that game. Not a chance. We had no shots on goal. We dominated the ball. But let's face it, we were toothless in the final third, playing the extra pass, falling over our feet, losing the ball. Sloppy mess. And then Sanchez clears it to the 36.6-yard point. And Declan Rice, whippy delish, bottom corner. It is the talking point of the game in terms of, like, the turning point. But James, it is a brilliant finish. So good that I think if Sanchez is in his goal, he still doesn't save it.
Yeah. The placement of it's fantastic. And, I mean, to hit it right away as well. I was already relatively excited about him when he first arrived. But he's made such, I mean, what is it, 10 league games? Sorry, 9 league games in there. He's made such a difference. He's such a, you know, he's such a good player, Jack. And afterwards as well, I thought his interview, I know you might have got a different one where you are, Jack, but the interview he gave on Sky was excellent. And do you know what? I watched that and I thought to myself, the way Odegaard's, you know, can go, and if he ever does get another big offer again, I'm like, you've got a ready-made person there. Like, as much as I would be upset Odegaard's left, I'm like, I wouldn't be upset from a point of view of, oh, who's going to be captain now? Because I'm like, you've got him. I'm like, that guy for me, the way he's going, he'll be captain of England after, you know, old socky bollocks up front retires. He'll be captain of England easily because he's that good. He's that, you know, if Southgate, you know, if the old pizza, you know, pizza idiot isn't there anymore, we get a manager that knows what he's doing. He'll give Declan Rice the captain's armband straight away because he's that good. And yeah, absolutely fantastic finish. But yeah, he's a bum, mate, Sanchez. I'd still, if it wasn't the fact that Chelsea have got the Brighton goalkeeping coach there now, he wouldn't be there because he's dreadful. He was dreadful for Brighton. They started playing their other goalkeeper, Steele, who's not even that good either. They started playing him towards the end of the season instead because Sanchez is just, yeah, he's rubbish.
I'll play with his feet, yes.
Nah, he's rubbish. And just going again, sorry, on what you said before, Liverpool have now got that guy banned from reffing their games, haven't they? He's not allowed to ref Liverpool games anymore because of all the fuss that they...
If that's true, yeah. Incredible.
Yeah. Well, it's like what we've... I think it was Neil that said, oh, so he can't make mistakes for Liverpool, but he can make mistakes for all the other 19 clubs. Then that's brilliant.
Perfect.
I'm like,
Mike,
yeah.
We asked for that for Mike Dean for about 9 years.
Well, this is it. Is that I'm like, okay, well, if that precedent's now been set, I hope Arsenal do write to the old PGMLO and go, I don't want this guy. Because, again, like I said, I don't like to dig on that, but he was absolute bobbins, that ref, yesterday. Like, even after the two goals, I know I'm jumping ahead of the gun, sorry, but the Havertz one at the end and the Nketiah one, they're not fouls. They're just stronger than the two that are trying to hold them off.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of those sort of 50-50 challenges, etc., went against us. I remember,
but they got all of them. They got
every single
of
one of them. Yeah, every single. And it might have been game state that sort of got you there. I have to say that the funnest part of the Declan Rice finish, beyond the fans sort of basically coming to life again, I thought they were terrific. I was hearing them even at 2-0 down. But you know, like, I don't think there's many being that fan base except 76th minute of thinking we're getting anything from this. And they just jump. And at that moment, I don't jump up when we're not at the very least level in a game. But I flew up at that moment. I was like, okay, we're getting something here now, right now. That's a turning point. But the way Enzo sort of does his Gabriel curve Do you know what I mean? Like the Gabriel offside curve to get out of the way of the deck. Like it's going wide. Brilliant. I thought it was fantastic. Oh, that 805 million. Little shifty. I love that. I thought it was great. If you watch it again and slow it down, he literally curves himself around the ball. Enzo Fernandez. Beautiful. Lovely, jubbly. That's 105 million midfielder for you, mate. But that was I thought it was fantastic. I thought Rice was, even before that goal, I thought he was probably our best player from the starting lineup. You do have to give Mikel credit because he was so annoyed on the touchline. I mean, you could tell he was livid. You could tell in the interview post-game, he was just so sure. He was so livid, even though we drew 2-2. He was, and I have to say, at like the 76, that maybe 76th minute, I was like, I have no idea what formation we're playing or where everyone's playing. That's how many subs we've made. Like, we've made so many at one time. I was like, I don't really know where we're putting Havertz or Smith Rowe, or it felt very sort of haphazard and just go for it kind of thing. But Neil, it worked. It worked because all of the subs, I would say bar Smith Rowe, I don't think he was terrific, to be honest. I think he had about a 50% possession pass rate. And I wasn't, but everyone else made a really positive impact, Neil. And you've got to give it Mikel full credit, haven't you, really, for that?
Yeah, it's like the complete opposite of when he made that crazy mass substitution against Man U, wasn't it? And it completely unbalanced the team. This one,
that was away, was it? Old Trafford.
Yeah, that's the one. But this one literally saved us. Wait, well, we got a point now. When I say saved us, I'm not talking about a win. I'm talking about saved us in terms of suffering our first defeat of the season. I thought I have to give mention to Tommy Yasuo. I know you have touched him before. He was amazing. Everything he has done has touched to gold. He is the Tommy. I said it before, and I know I'm repeating myself on the podcast, but he's the Tommy that we saw when he first came, when he came off the plane. He's brilliant. You know, I'm always championing Trossard and Emil Smith Rowe to get more minutes. Well, he needs more minutes as well. Look, I love Zinchenko just as much as you guys do, but he's not right for every single game. He's not. He's good for certain games, but not every single game. And that's when you bring in the likes of Tomiyasu. There was one point where he was holding on the defender and he was doing nothing wrong. And it's like, you know, and on another day, that maybe a foul would have been given against him, but he's just showing his strength as what he can do, and he can control. You know, we laud about Saliba and Gabriel all the time, and we talk about Ben White. Poor Tommy never gets a mention. I think he's a great defender for us. I really do. And he is the next best thing that we can have for following that horrific and unfortunate, you know, injury to Timber. So we're lucky to have a Timber 2.0, if you like. And I agree with you. I think Timber would have been player of the season if he didn't got injured. That's without a doubt. I can't wait for him to come back, and I hope he's the same, if not better, when he comes back before his injury. I really do, but sorry to digress. But yeah, all the substitutes, and then obviously my man Trossard. I thought he played. He plays a very different role to Martinelli. He's a different type of player, but he brings a different dimension to us. Martinelli's all about injection and pace, enthusiasm. I think Trossard is, I think in some ways, a technically different type of player. He doesn't have that pace and injection of energy, but what he does bring is, I think, his awareness, his positioning, all those kind of facets that he brings to the game, which is so good. And, you know, he always makes some kind of impact when he comes on as a sub, always. It's very rare that he doesn't. Yeah, I think he started a couple of games where he might not have been as effective, but when he comes on as a sub, he's a devastating player. And right place, right time, as much as we laud Saka, who had a terrible game but gets the numbers. It was a great cross, by the way. That was a beautiful
and brilliant cross from Havertz to get the ball out to him, wasn't it? To take it down to the floor, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. And I just wanted to mention, I don't normally talk about lineups, but my surprise was Havertz wasn't in the team actually yesterday. I thought if he was going to play an ex-Chelsea player, it would have been him, not Jorginho. That was my surprise, actually. And I thought Havertz done all right. He has actually done all right the last two or three games. So I think this thing about coming on as a sub for him is actually working. Mm. He's not thrown into the Dragon's Den from, you know, the Lion's Den right from the get-go. And I think it's working. I think he's playing better coming on as a sub at the moment, and hopefully that fuels his confidence. But anyway, I thought Trossard's positioning for that great cross was brilliant, talking about awareness, and it saved us. It saved us from losing, you know, our loss. I'm not saying we deserved it. As an Arsenal fan, I'm elated. We could have actually even won it with Eddie's attempt, which would have
great
been unbelievable. It would have been a replica of Kanu. So, you know, 15 minutes left, 2-0 down.
Well,
but you know what I mean.
No, that was it. You were saying who's going to be our Nigel Winterburn or Kanu moment.
Yeah, exactly.
In the end, it ended up being a Silvinho, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right. But I just feel that, you know, end of the day, I think what we did was, from a substitution point of view, it was absolutely fantastic. It really was. It worked. Arteta is criticised for a lot of things, but I think now, in recent times, he's been getting his substitutions right. He's getting them bang on right, and I think that they're making a great impact. I agree with you, Jimmy Smith Rowe, but I'm still going to champion his cause. I just don't think he's getting enough time. He needs to be a starter for me. He needs to have the minutes. I think at the moment, the way I see him going, it's not looking good for me. I'm really horrible. I've got a horrible feeling at the pit of my stomach that because he's not getting the chance, he's not going to do it. Yeah. He's not going to do it with his cameo appearances for me. And do you know what? If you're going to talk about Lons, before we finish the podcast, I'd even say give him a go. Not Lons, sorry. Villa. Yeah.
Well, I will say something, Neil, on that. Obviously, they sacked their manager and they brought in a new manager, Seville. They look a different side since they brought in their new manager. They just drew 1-1 with Real Madrid and they probably should have won it. I didn't watch it, but I've looked at the stats on it, and they probably should have won it. So it is going to be a very, very tough game.
What is it? We always play teams when they have a new manager. What is it?
Always the way, Neil. And we'll get onto that. But I do think, you know, like we said before, the last Champions League game, but I can't see it being too different. I don't see more than 3 changes tops. I just don't make them, you know, the likes of Tomiyasu and Trossard should be right there. And hopefully, Partey's come back pretty fit because he didn't feature in this game, which was very interesting, wasn't it? I mean, the way the game was going, I felt that would have been one of my first. So it was very interesting that he made 5 changes and Vieira wasn't even in the squad. I don't know if we read too much into that. I know his wife's heavily pregnant as well. Congratulations to Ramsdale, but maybe that was part of it, or maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was just the fact that he didn't make the squad, which would have been quite interesting. And maybe that is a positive in the sense of Smith Rowe coming on at 2-0 down and giving him the... Because those are important minutes. The minutes he's had in the Premier League this season.
I was shocked that he came on first.
Right.
That did
quite
surprise
a positive,
me.
Isn't it?
I thought, okay, you're backing him there. And, yeah, like Neil said, there is a part of me. But, Neil, I don't know if it's how you felt as well. To me, I was talking to Jack about it again last night. I was like, he looked shaky. He looked nervous. He looked so nervous. And I'm like, this ain't you.
No.
Like, Smith Rowe, I know, takes this in his stride. He's like, he wants a bit of this. He's like, okay, it's cagey. It's a bit, you know, we're 2-0 down. Let's try it. I'll carry the ball here. I'll thread it through to someone, or I'll curl one in myself. But he just looked bereft. And I'm like, you know, there was the clips, wasn't there, of after the Brentford game. He was crying, weren't he, at the final whistle because of the chances he missed.
Bournemouth.
Yeah. And I was just like, wow. I'm like, is this affected? You know, is all this getting to him that much?
I think James is because he's getting very
a lot
few
of people
chances.
Do forget people forget they are human, and
yeah.
I'm like, this is crushing him. This is crushing.
He
him.
Needs a start exactly. or two, but he's not getting it, is he? That's the thing.
I think because he's getting so few chances, he knows that he's got to act very quickly on them, and he's got to make an impact straight away. And I think the pressure's getting to him. You know, I agree with you, James. The way I've always seen him, his mentality and his attitude. You think, my God, this guy is not scared. He's very confident. He's very self-assured.
Yeah.
And when he's going to come on, he's going to make a difference. But I think because of what's happened to him and how he's completely been pushed out of the team, and there's no, you know, I'm not saying that's a bad thing because we've had good players, but I just feel that for him as a person, him as an individual, I think it's affected him finally. I think you're right. He didn't look, it was a shadow of himself. I mean, they all were yesterday. Let's not just focus on him.
Given
the fact that he had an opportunity to come on and make a difference, like the other substitutes did, he didn't, unfortunately. And I just want to see him given a game, a full game. Just give him a... But I don't know. As you said, I didn't realise Sevilla had turned it around. So
Well, we know what they're like in Europe anyway.
The level now is so high, isn't it? I mean, when Smith Rowe come in and had his amazing time, the level was, you know, it was diabolical. He come on, you know, left eight as well, where we all want him to play. We're like, that's his position, that's where we want him. And he just didn't assert himself at all. And it was a kicker. But just quick on Trossard, I don't know if I like my stats. I don't know if you saw this one. His first three Premier League goals for Arsenal. What was it? Brentford, Everton, and this one at Chelsea. They've either been an opener or an equaliser. So it's like, he's so important. The goals he scores are so important. And I'm like, I'm like, we need it.
Five of our subs have scored, James.
Exactly. And I love him. I was talking about him before we signed him, about he's an option if we go there. I'd love it. And I've been so happy since we've got him. He's brilliant for me.
It was sort of poetic justice after the Madrid goal that our sort of replacement for him.
I didn't even think about it like that.
Yeah, and showed him up. And I remember, I didn't really think about it until later on. I was like, yeah, that's who you want getting a goal if you're going to get an equaliser there, wasn't it? But in the end, we could have won it for Reddy. I don't know how he gets that ball first, but again, endless work rate, tireless when he came on. I thought he gave him another problem, which they were hoping Jackson would give us, I think, which to a degree he may well have done, but I think Eddie was far more impactful, and there was only one team that was going to win it at that point. Really, they were trying to slow the game at 2-2. They were disappointed, but they were trying to slow the game.
It's nice to know that Arsenal's basement is Chelsea's ceiling, isn't it? You know,
I saw someone say that as well. Yes,
that made me quite happy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a game you should win, that you expect to win in the stage that we're at, but where when you see the whole game, you have to be sort of pleased with the result in the end of that, and try to correct the mistakes that you made in the first 70 minutes as soon as possible, because we're travelling in a day to Sevilla. We haven't got time to do it really, but we've got to think about it. And he's got to give some chances to players that showed it from the bench, I think. But you know, on Tuesday, I expect he probably will do. But 2-2 in the end. I don't think you can really give a man of the match, but if you're going to give it to anyone, it probably has to be Rice or one of the subs. Yes. Tomiyasu had a 95% pass accuracy when he came on. I think he's got to be in with a shout, to be honest. Neil, you've got to be happy with the point in a way. And not from the start, but in the end, you've got to be kind of satisfied with the point, haven't you?
Oh, 100%. It was a win. For me, it was a win. It felt like, well, not a win. It felt like a win. You know, when sometimes you say it feels like a win. When it goes against us, so many times we're leading and the team comes back. At least this time it was on the other foot, and it really did, because we didn't deserve it. I'm going to be completely honest with you guys. We didn't deserve it. Just set aside the rubbish referee, but that's something that we encounter every time we play, sit on the pitch anyway, so it's not a new thing. But set aside that, I still don't think we were good enough from a performance level to say that we wanted anything out of the game. Absolutely ecstatic. And you know what? That's what I love about Rice. You know, you guys touched on it earlier. I think he's the modern day Tony Adams. I really do. How Tony Adams was a captain for us, and I'm not. That's with no disrespect to Vieira, because Vieira was outstanding as well. But he was slightly different in his captaincy. I think Declan Rice is as close as you can get to what we used to have with the figurehead, Tony Adams. Yeah, I know they're very, very different people, and Tony Adams was there from the start, came through the ranks. But I think Declan Rice is up there, and I agree with what the comments made earlier that, you know, he should be captain for England because he's that good. He's that good. And he's worth every penny. He really is. But I just wanted to just mention that, you know, he's so important for us. So damn important. It's untrue. And we've just got to hope that he stays fit. And we hope that, you know, we keep him interested enough to stay with the club for a long time, because he's the future for us. He certainly is that. But yeah, I'm definitely happy with the point. And I like what he said. He said the same thing as you just said. He said in the interview, which is, I like, he's got the balls to come out and say we were sloppy, we weren't good enough. And he said, you know, I think he even alluded to that, you don't wake up when you need to. You've got to be in the 90-minute game. You know, the snippets where we play. And he says, that's what's frustrating. We can show the world and to ourselves what we can do when we turn it on. You know, we even gave City problems in that second half. And he says, we can do it. And we did it for the last 10, 15 minutes here today. We should be doing that for the whole 90. So can you imagine what we would be like if we played like that all throughout the game? It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, we'd have smashed them to bits. We'd have smashed them because they're crap.
Yeah.
If we'd have done that 15 minutes from the beginning, yeah, we'd have easily. I mean, I thought we were, you know, I knew that Chelsea were going to raise it, but I said before, I was like, I thought we were going to win 3-1 yesterday.
Yeah.
I was that confident.
Yeah. I felt it was going to be harder than, the one thing, I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but they obviously, this is the first game this season, they didn't really play with a sort of pinpoint, focal point striker, and I'm not sure Saliba and Gabriel handled not having someone to mark that well, you know. And but the one thing I thought going into this game is Pochettino is quite good at setting teams up for big games, like he used to do it with Tottenham a lot. You know, they'd go in and they wouldn't play pretty necessarily, but they'd find a way to nullify the opposition against big teams. You know, he won against City, you know, in the Champions League and things like that. He would find a way oftentimes. So that he knows how to set teams up in big games. Don't particularly like the football that he plays or anything like that, but he definitely knows how to set teams up. And Chelsea, let's be honest, the amount of money they spent, it would be shocking if Chelsea aren't in and around the top five this season, and I think they will be. So the position currently is not really true to what we're dealing with at all. And also, you're not dealing with a team that say Liverpool were on the first day of the season. It's completely different, right? Completely different. You go on 2 months with a manager settled in with brand new players everywhere, it's a big, big difference again. Like you're saying, you know, playing a team at a certain time again. It always seems to be the way with us. But 2-2, look, we take the point. We've got Sheffield United next weekend, and you hope we can get back to playing some good football. We've still got a ways to go there on this season in terms of getting our creative fluidity back. And you'd hope that's a game that we can really start to do that, but not underestimate Sheffield United. I know they put up a good performance against some big teams, you know, Tottenham and Man U yesterday, you know, things like that. So let's go to the predictions. We've got Sevilla away, and then we'll do the prediction for Sheffield United at home. James, I'll go to you. Give me your first score predictions, and if you think any specific changes will happen in midweek with such a quick turnaround. Personally, I'm thinking, you know, the likes of Tomiyasu and Trossard have to be very close to being placed in there. But I just wonder what your thoughts are there.
Yeah, so for Tuesday, I do think he's going to stick with Raya and goal. I don't think he's going to budget. I think the back four picks itself. I don't think it'll be Tomiyasu. I think Zinchenko will come back in for that one. I think maybe Partey, Rice and Odegaard will be the three. I don't think he'll start Jorginho midweek. And after what Neil said and what you've said with Jesus, I'll have to watch that again because I'm like you, Jack. I don't know if he. I didn't think Neil. I'm gonna have to. What are you saying? He looked concussed. I thought that he took a big wallop. Like he got walloped hard. But I didn't think at any time he was concussed. But I will watch that again. So if that is something that has happened, it would not shock me that Eddie starts up front. If that's the case, just let him have that rest and then have him come in against Sheffield. But I don't know. But yeah, I think the other two, Saka's definitely going to play. If Saka's fit, he's definitely playing. So we won't go into that. And Martinelli, I think, yeah, he'll play. So it wouldn't shock me. So, but I'm going to go. My head's telling me a draw on Tuesday, which I don't like. So I'm going to go with my heart. And I'm going to say we're going to win, you know, a la Thierry Henry in the Bernabeu. We're going to go to Spain and we're going to win 1-0. And it's going to be Gabriel Martinelli to score.
Oof, oof. And your prediction for the weekend?
My prediction for weekend. Oh, without knowing what happens midweek, because I'm like, if we have another lens, we're going to have a reaction. But yeah, I'll go 2-0 the weekend against Sheffield United, and I will go for pick Martinelli for that one. Come on, Odegaard. Let's get you back. I mean, it's so weird. Every time he plays for Norway, the game after for Arsenal, he is normally rubbish. because he's their captain. He overexerts himself so much for because Haaland was apparently bobbins for Norway midweek. I think he didn't even play the second game. So yeah, he just overexerts himself. He overexerts himself for Norway because he's captain of Norway, and then he comes in bloody, you know, cooked for us. And then he's rubbish. But we'll get Odegaard back on form at the weekend.
All right, I'll take those results any day of the week. But Neil, what's your predictions? Any predictions on the lineup? But then predictions for Seville and Sheffield United.
Yeah, I think I'll go with James on this one. I think he's not going to change anything at the back. I think even Raya is going to, Spanish team. I actually think he's going to stick with Raya, and the back four won't change as much as I'd like to see Tomiyasu play a bit more. But I think he'll stick with Zinchenko. Hopefully, Zinchenko will be a different animal on Tuesday. And I also think the front three are not going to change. I think it's still going to be the same, unless, of course, the thing with Jesus, it might be Eddie coming in, which isn't a bad thing. I don't think. Midfield, with the exception of Jorginho, will stay the same as well. I think we might see Pato. This might be from the off, or it certainly will be at some point in the game. But could even play Havertz in midfield instead of a Jorginho. But it's not going to be much. I think two changes, three at the very, very max. And prediction-wise, I my head's telling me draw as well. I don't know why. I think it's because what you just scared me of saying that they look like a different team now. But I can't do draws. I can't do, definitely won't do a loss. So I'll go 2-1. I'll say 2-1. And I'll say Odegaard for that game, actually. I'll say Odegaard for that game and 2-1. And then Sheffield United, I think we'll be back to our best. I've got a feeling it's going to be a good day. I think we're going to wallop them. I think we're going to wallop them 4-0. And I'll go with Saka. So 4-0 Saka on Sheffield.
Just on Saka, I thought we'd talk about the subs that he made. I thought it was brilliant that he left Saka on, because Saka, if one player is going to give you one big moment with a terrible performance, it is Bukayo Saka. And he did do that, didn't he? So that, I thought that was very good. But I'll predict the draw against Seville. I actually think he might bring Tomiyasu in for that one. And possibly Partey. And then maybe you'll see a different striker if there's an issue with Jesus. Yeah, so maybe the maximum three, though. Yeah, I think, like you, I think you'll probably stick with Raya. But I think I'll go like 1-1. 1-1 and Saka for that one. And then Sheffield United, I'll go 3-1. And Jesus for that one. I'll go 3-1, Jesus. But... yeah, I mean, we can't look. We've got to make sure we get something in midweek. We have to make sure we get something in midweek, because
when that group come out, all the aways made me go, ugh.
Right.
I thought away, I don't like. I was like, we'll beat probably all three of them at home. But I was like, away. I still got, even him as a manager, I've still got little irks about him in a way. In a way, in Europe, he's not. He ain't as astute about it as I think he is.
But
I'm here to be proved wrong. I'm happy to be proved wrong. So,
yeah, fingers crossed.
And I mean, smack me in the face with it, prove me wrong. Because that's what I want.
But Seville, I know they've had a poor start in Europe and a poor start to the season. But I think you're dealing with a different team now, with new manager, and what I've seen of. What they've done in last recent weeks, I think you'll be dealing with a team that's really, really going to go at you and press high and be full of energy. So we can't start games like
that. And they've got Ramos, Jack. We know what he's like. He's the king of the old SHIT houses, mate. So
yeah. So we need someone that's going to deal. Actually, you need Jesus for that, don't you? You want Jesus there for that, because he knows how to deal with that sort of stuff. You really, really do. So let's fingers crossed. But boys, we've got a point. It's not the perfect way to come back after an international break. But again, like you said, we showed some real character there. So got to do the same this week in midweek. Quick turnaround, isn't it? So we'll get everyone raring to go. Hopefully, a couple of changes will get us fresh and get us up to speed again, get us creatively moving. Got to keep the faith. Long season, long way to go. Fingers crossed for two more wins. Up the Arsenal, boys. Thank you so much.
Invincible still on. Come on.
Come on, boys. I don't even know how to stop the recording now. Oh, there you go.